You're listening to the Musical Ecology's Radio Hour. I'm your host, Dan Joseph, and once a month we bring you a mix of conversations and musical selections by artists featured on the Musical Ecology series in Park Slope, Brooklyn. I invite you to visit our website for more information on our artists and upcoming events at musicalecologies.net. For tonight's program, we'll revisit our event on Thursday, May 19th, with Tom Chu's Ensemble Metrics, a new mixed instrumentation group founded by the violinist and composer. Ensemble Metrics is a vehicle for Chu's vision of the performative party band, replacing DJs and turntables with live musicians who spin extended jams, morphing melodic fragments and motivic riffs from specific bands or genres from the pop rock idiom. The evening marked the public debut of Ensemble Metrics, and we began the evening with a conversation about the origins of this new project, among many other topics. Let's listen now to my conversation with violinist and composer Tom Chu at the Old Stone House in Park Slope, Brooklyn. So with that, again, welcome, Tom, and so we're very excited to be hosting this debut performance. So tell us...
A great reveal.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Ensemble Metrics. So how did this group come together, or this project?
For those of you that have known my work over the years, I've done a lot with the group. I'm probably most... commonly associated with the Flux Quartet that I founded about 17, 18 years ago.
Sure.
Which is a project I love. I guess it was time for me to have a new baby. So, and I wanted something that is completely independent in terms of aesthetics and personnel.
Right.
I love all kinds of music, and I want to explore and perform all kinds of music. So
sure,
just something that allows me to do a lot of lot of different diverse things.
Right. So Flux, as many of you know, I'm sure, is very serious, mostly modernist, a lot of New York schools, very meaty contemporary classical string quartet repertoire, almost exclusively, right? So that's a very specific thing.
Yeah,
right?
it's Flux plays the music that hasn't been written yet.
Right.
I mean, that even the music that hasn't been written sounds like it would be written
right.
20 years from now.
Right. But as I said, a very meaty kind of thing.
Whereas that's the focus, yeah.
Right. Whereas tonight we're exploring definitely some other idioms. Maybe even a very specific idiom, but certainly an idiom in a musical world very much outside of this modernist aesthetic, right?
It's outside, but there are connections. I think opening the double doors wider, that's all.
Right. All right. So what we do know about the project, this is, of course, a debut, and it's a brand new piece, brand new everything, so we don't know that much. But what we do know about it is that there's a lot of, I guess what you've told me so far, there's certainly a lot of quotations, for starters, right?
Well, all right,
this is very quotation-heavy.
Let me clarify. Okay, so the Ensemble Metrics, like I said, is going to engage in a great diversity of project stylistically and with respect to genre.
Right.
What I'm doing tonight is a specific part.
I see.
Okay? Mm-hmm. But this is a part that has fascinated me for over 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This specific thing,
right.
And it is regarding quotations.
Right.
And it's quotations of really rock and popular music that have been very influential on me.
Right.
Now, I first did a project like that. We could call it the quotation project, okay?
Quotation.
Or the, I have a better phrase for it.
Sure.
It's recontextualizing existing material. Putting, yeah, grabbing, and really this could be done with all music, okay? This is grabbing very memorable motives, hooks, riffs,
right,
and put it in a different scenario.
Right.
Okay. Right. And there, this, now, there's a history to my passion for this.
Specifically for this, mixing and matching or quoting and recontextualizing.
The first piece I did of this sort was 99-2000, so more than 15 years ago.
I see.
And in that piece, and it was about a 20-minute piece, and I focused on the material of the New York rock band Sonic Youth. And I focused on, there might have been material from three albums, but the two primary ones were Daydream Nation and A Thousand Leaves.
Okay.
And then there might have been something else, but yeah, that was, that piece I did more than 15 years ago, and the two pieces you'll hear tonight has the same, has the same executional concept behind
it.
So
trying to put it kind of simply, I mean, in terms of how you're putting these different materials. So you're collecting a lot of different materials, quotations from a lot of songs, bands that have been influential to you, and then so what is the method that? Is this a through composed score, or is it improvised, or is it conducted in real time, or how is this going to happen? I mean, what is the musical device?
I think it's a combination of the first two things you said.
Okay.
It is through
composed.
It is a through sketched out score.
Okay.
So it
has a beginning, a middle, an end.
The lay of the land. Yeah. The map is laid out.
The map is laid out.
But
okay,
a lot of surface details are not.
Right.
And that's the surface details will be provided by ensemble metrics.
Excellent. So there's a lot of in the hands of the players.
A lot of it is in the hands of the players.
Which will include you, of course. And I guess the full, we have a quintet here that will be for all the pieces. Everyone will play all the pieces.
So we're doing two pieces tonight.
And both include the full group.
It's a fivesome for both pieces. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, all right. So this has this goes all the way back to some piece you did in the
about 15 years ago. More than 15 years ago.
Right. And then you did another sort of some iteration of it even more recently. Am I mistaken? I mean, I know this. It's finally congealed into a group and a project with an identity as it's described. But there were there other antecedent projects that
explored this concept.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of one that you know, at the Stone, maybe it was a couple of years ago, that had some relation.
Yeah,
to this, right?
That's right. One of the two pieces I'm doing tonight is that piece. Hmm. A little bit edited and improved, but it's that piece. And and actually your host Dan was playing drums on that piece 2 years ago.
Coincidentally. Okay. Well, I want to set the stage a little more for the piece. But before we do, we'll maybe wrap up with that. Just kind of a.
Sure.
But I want to skip around a little bit and just get a little more, more about you, and so now we have a pretty clear idea about the project. But I wanted to ask you, as you're best known as a violinist, as the founder of Flux and freelance violinist in all sort of contexts, seems to me, I mean, I've known you now for some years here in New York, and it seems to me that the composer side of you is it seems to be emerging more. Am I mistaken about that, or has it always been in the mix? It seems like there are more projects that you're undertaking as a composer.
I came to New York in the fall of '93 to start graduate studies at Juilliard.
Right.
And that got me to New York. And from the fall, really that planted the seeds for me to have an aesthetic explosion. And I would say...
Just being in New York.
Yeah, just being in New York,
sure.
And I would say by 95, you know, two and a half years. Sure. About, let's just say a couple years later, I was, it was just where my interests went and drifted. Right. I was really drawn to the downtown improvising scene.
Sure.
And I think if any of you who, I mean, everyone here is some sort of music fan, right? And I mean, either you do music, either you play music or you don't play music, you love music. And the natural process, if you know, you love something, you go check it out. You accumulate, you expose yourself to that you're interested in. And then the next step you do is you try to do it. Right. So I mean, that's what I'm talking about, the improvisation scene.
Right.
I was drawn to it, then the next thing that it led to is I started to do it, and then I started to meet and work with a lot of those type of artists who are extremely interesting.
Right.
So I would say, and that then very naturally led to my creating my own works, and it's just a natural evolution.
Right.
So I've been writing new pieces for 20 years.
Right.
But to your question, I think, yeah, in the last 5 to 8 years, within the last 10 years, right. I'm investing more focus on, right. investing more energy in that area.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it seems to me. So. And the, you know, the bringing this group forward, you know, in a more formal way. I mean, you have a website, for example, ensemblemetrics.
Well, I mean, I want to bring something up because
sure.
it's just, I think some people might, I don't know, maybe some of you I don't know, you know, I want to talk to each of you after the show individually because that's the best way to grow. But I think definitely some people have a conception that composers and players have separate roles, or one can do one and not necessarily the other.
Right. Well, there is some a traditional division, certainly, or somewhat of a division.
Well, it's a division that has it's something that's slowly evolved into that over 350 years.
Right.
Because it didn't used to be like that.
That's right.
You know? Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
It's a modern invention, really, or a modern adaptation.
It's a result of the business of music.
Oh, right.
Okay.
That's right.
But, and you know, I'm going to use classical as a point of reference because I do play a classical instrument as Stu. I mean, percussion overlaps more to more areas. But other genres of music, that distinction is less clear.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
True. That's true.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I will say, like, going back again to the mid-90s when I, you know, first found myself in New York,
right.
That really started to have a great impact on me.
Right.
See how...
Because up until that time, you were more in the traditional role as a violinist. Right?
Yeah.
So being in New York in the 90s as a graduate student kind of opened you up to a much wider range of possibilities.
Right.
And so here you are.
Right.
And 20 or so.
And I say this because I want to tell all you players there, I want to encourage all you players there to create your own music.
Right.
And I want also all you composers there to brush up on your skills on a particular instrument.
Good advice. So I'm with you on that. I mean, I share your enthusiasm. For
I mean, it's just that being a musician. You should,
right.
you know. And so I don't. The only thing I want to say about the only thing I want to clarify about my increased energy towards the compositional side of my activities is all I'm doing is just being a more well-rounded musician.
I understand. So
yeah.
For you, the distinction between composer and performer is a pretty moot point for you, in other words.
Yeah.
And, you know, for in the broadest sense, it's really irrelevant, I think, whether or not society at large or the music industry at large sees it that way.
Right.
That's really the way it is.
Right.
As in terms of your view, and I think I share it. I mean, there are just these roles that have evolved, and so I understand.
Now, having said that,
yes,
I think in recent trends show a more healthy assimilation of the two sides.
I would agree.
So that's a good thing.
That does seem to be the case.
Yeah.
It does seem to be the case. Although they're still very entrenched lineages, I guess you could say,
yeah,
for both. But in general, I would agree. There are more and more of these composer-performers. The boundaries are just a little more porous than they used to.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
Great. So, well, that's great. So, okay. So you're just a more well-rounded musician. Great. So
I want to play and share what I love.
That's right.
And
okay.
I don't try to play bad music, and I don't know why people would do that.
Good for you, John. Good for you. Well, good.
It'll take a gigantic price tag to make me play bad music again. Lots of zeros.
Good.
Lots of zeros.
Well, good. Well, so we're in store for some very good music tonight. Just in case there was any question, no bad music tonight. All right, I want to move on to another topic, though. So the name of your...
Okay.
So the name of your project, Ensemble Metrics. Now I know, I mean, it's a little bit of a play on words. It's metrics with an X, so that's kind of a neologism.
I guess you could say. Short, catchy words with yes. the letter X in it.
However, I understand. However, there is an underlying implication or suggestion here, right? Apart from it's an X-y word, it also refers to the idea of metrics of data.
It's
statistics.
It's an intentional misspelling of metrics.
Right. That's so tell correct. Us a little bit about your knowledge or your relationship to this idea of metrics and. I mean, I know that it's something that interests you in
all
spheres of the world, not just music. But go ahead, yeah. Tell us about metrics and your music.
Okay, those of you who know me personally knows that I love numbers. I've always, in my present life, like maybe a decade later, I still might win the Nobel Prize in math. Okay, mark my words. All right, but anyways, I love numbers, and I love numbers, and I love statistics.
Right.
I love being bombarded by numbers and analyzing those numbers.
And yeah. we live in a statistically rich era, right?
It's
a lot of data.
It's all about analytics.
Analytics and metrics, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's all about analytics and metrics. Yeah.
So with that, predilection of yours, how does that work in the musical sense, or how might it work? What are some scenarios or some areas of investigation?
Well, there could be music that's created by putting a lot of data, right, into some software program, people do that. I'm gonna admit something, okay?
Okay.
For the most part, tonight's project is not so much about metrics.
Okay, but there was some, you did bring some.
Oh, false advertising.
Right.
No, but.
I mean, there's some metrics involved here. I mean, I think we've talked about some data that you're bringing to bear here, but go on.
I'm gonna go a little bit in tangent. I'm gonna go somewhere that you don't expect me to go.
Good.
Okay? Okay,
go,
but
go.
It's gonna be, maybe I'll use a different word. Maybe mechanical or something, or it's still something related to the crunching of data. Because, and now I'm gonna bring it back to the essence of the project, okay?
Yes.
I don't know if how many of you have heard me explain what I'm doing today as I've compared it to a disc jockey spinning records, except the difference is the five players, the group Ensemble Metrics, they're all disc jockeys.
Okay.
And they're all, you know, they're all spinning records at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'm just the head disc jockey who compiled the playlist.
Okay.
So each of us is crunching data.
In real time.
That's right. Okay, how's that?
That's good. Yeah. That's very good.
But that's really, I mean, when you listen to the performance or music, I don't know, maybe have that in the back of your head.
Right.
Because I think the result, I mean, this is not like the type of disc jockey at a wedding that plays, you know. And then I love wedding disc jockeys.
Sure.
Okay, but they usually play like, you know, like full songs, full songs.
Yeah.
This is a disc jockey I guess it might be like a more like clubby disc jockey.
Right.
Because what they're doing is they're deconstructing songs.
Right, and
they're playing
recontextualizing.
Deconstructing and recontextualizing,
sure.
Yeah. Because they'll play a song and then they'll get to a place
right.
that has a cool motive and they might stay there.
Right. They might start repeating
and
looping
do some
it or
things.
Scratching it.
And they might layer another song on top of it and, you know, and just mash it all up. That's close to
what you're doing. All right.
That's the concept.
I understand. Well, so I think we need to bring up an important influence or a touchstone here in our community that I know that you're interested in that somehow embodies a lot of these. And I'm talking about WFMU.
Oh,
so Freeform Radio. This is
best radio station.
WFMU is the sort of the standard bearer for
best
something
radio station
called Freeform
Mars,
Radio,
yeah.
Right? So what I think a lot of programming on WFMU and in many ways
it's like free advertising for them.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Jen.
I think that what you're describing is a lot of what I hear on WFMU in many ways, right?
That station because it's filled with music
lovers.
There's
a lot of mashing up going on. There's, you know, there's a whole genre of music really that, you know, that called the mashup, right? That is doing a lot of work. So in a way, this is kind of improvised acoustic chamber music, freeform chamber music, in a way. Or it seems like it's a relevant connection, no?
We're a performative party band.
Performative party band. All right. Great. So
that's all right.
We're gonna have a party.
I like your description.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's, you know, it's
maybe
it's
more, you know,
it's
rather than chamber music,
here.
I think it's more, it's a music chamber.
A music chamber.
Yeah, it's a music chamber.
That's recontextualized.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, this is a chamber, and there's music.
It's
so
a music
it
chamber. It's
okay.
A lot of surprises.
All right. Well, let's get back to the actual piece. I think there's some other things. So we pretty much described the piece to a large extent, but there are some particular ingredients that, I mean, somewhere the band Stereolab figures pretty prominently in this. Am I mistaken?
So, okay. I'm doing two pieces tonight. So the first piece, and you know what? I have a name for these type of quotation pieces. It's part of my stock series.
Stock.
Because I have a stock of quotations, or I have a stock of, samples.
It's
the
database.
Same, yeah, I have a database, yeah.
Database.
The first piece I've titled Stereo Stock.
Stereo Stock.
And it's completely, it's the material is all from Stereolab. It's like 90-95% because there's 5-10% that I wrote.
I see.
Usually just as transitions and bridges from song to song. But anyways.
So So that's a piece built entirely from Stereolab. Is a group from, I guess, from the 90s largely, but
early 90s to mid 2000s.
That went on a very long time, a very influential British-based group with some members, a French lead singer. And so a very influential band for you.
Yeah, very, very influential
and
for me.
And a group with a lot of great tunes and a lot of great motives.
Yeah.
And great material to recontextualize. So that's one stock.
Can I add an additional thing?
Of course.
And this applies definitely to Stereolab, but to also a lot of the other, broadly genre music that I like. Stereolab's music is extremely contrapuntal.
Right.
Is that? Contrapuntal. Who doesn't know that word?
Oh, come on, Tom. We know.
I don't know.
Well, you don't have to out anybody, okay. Do you? Lots of people know what contrapuntal is.
Okay, yeah. It's a weird, because, you know,
there's a lot going on, a lot of independent lines going on.
Like the spelling of that word is very different from the parallel noun that it refers to.
Right. Well, you can explain counterpointal.
Otherwise,
it
would be counterpointal.
Counterpointal, which would also be
But look, it's music. It's the type of, it has a lot of lines. And actually, like to me, like Stereolab has a lot in common with Johann Sebastian.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
In that it's contrapuntal.
And a lot of my favorite, you know, rock and pop music has a lot of overlap with Johann Sebastian. Yeah.
Excellent. And so that's the piece, the first piece.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece is also featuring material by groups that are somewhat contrapuntal. Yes?
So now the second piece sort of emerged out of a conversation with you.
With me? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's also my interest, but I decided to focus on a specific historic period.
Right.
And a specific, specific style and genre, right? And it's basically about 79 to 84. And I also made it geographically specific. It's just England. English.
Just English.
I don't... So anyway, this is what they call... These bands, I have... It's material... I draw materials from about 10 bands.
Mm-hmm.
English bands from the 79 to 84 period, and it's a specific genre known as post-punk.
Post-punk, right.
These were all bands that were greatly influenced by the punk era.
Right, and immediately followed the main years of the so-called punk era.
Right.
So it was a description that was both literal but also became a term unto itself that kind of described a style that was both literally after punk, but was a style unto itself, right?
Yeah.
To a large extent.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, the characterizations of the style, as always in the history of art, came afterwards, right? You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's true. So what is the stock here? Is it what are we calling this? Or what is the title of the work?
The working title. So one of the seminal bands of that, and a great thing about this project, this specific piece, is actually I had to catch up with three or four bands that I was embarrassingly less familiar with, and so one of those bands was the band Gang of Four.
Uh huh.
And so I have tentatively titled this piece "The Gang of Post Punk Stock."
The Gang of Post Punk Stock. Okay. So it's Gang of Four and other related contemporaries and peers of that period, right?
Gang of Four, The Fall, Wire, Joy Division, Public Image, and then a little later, New Order,
mm-hmm.
Echo and the Bunnymen, that's like one of my favorite bands of all time, and right. Susie and the Banshees. Mm-hmm. Probably the latest band, even though, I mean, they started in 79. You'll hear a few recognizable tunes by The Cure. I have to throw in this, a little, you know, Candy.
Okay. and we'll be able to hear that, right?
Hopefully,
Well, I mean, there's certainly, you know, my knowledge of post-punk and punk for that matter, is that it's, you know, it's music with a certain attitude and a certain axe to grind, or a certain kind of
it's a liberator. Kind of anger, you know, I think it's,
there's an edge.
You know, I think it's similar to any anti-art movement you would find in history.
Well, it's also political.
Also
a political period as well. It was a music.
And
that
a lot
had a
of these people
politics.
Can't play their instruments for, you know.
Or they're not. They're not virtuoso. They didn't get
right.
the DMA at,
no.
at Juilliard. That's
no,
true.
But they made their instruments purely from their spirit and passion.
Right.
I mean, made their music from spirit and, from their spirit and passion.
Right. It's really the, you know, the original DIY.
That's right. It's
music.
It's not from their skill level. Yeah.
No.
Exactly.
It's like, well, I want to play music. I'm just gonna pick up a guitar
and
that's
why
play music.
That's why
that's
a lot
happens.
Of their music evokes much greater pathos. You know, and.
Oh, they have their
gestalt.
They're driven people.
Yeah,
and they're not going to be stopped because
no.
they don't know how to play their guitar.
Exactly.
Right? Well, good. So some of that. You're harnessing some of that energy and choosing this particular body of material in some way, or are you making? Are you trying?
Well,
trying to connect with them?
I relay. Yeah, I mean this is music that I like a lot. Yeah.
And is there a political or a,
no?
It's just purely
no.
appreciation, music appreciation.
No, our art is pure.
An homage, right?
Yeah, it's all pure.
Well, but it does bring up the question though, when, I mean, obviously this is a lot of appropriation that you're doing here
yes.
entirely. But the practice of appropriation of quotation that it's widely practiced in music for all of music history, but also in the visual arts. I mean, there's a lot of potential baggage or meaning, or there's often something behind one's appropriating of other material. Not always, but sometimes there's something, you know, there's a reason, let's say, why someone is appropriating this particular tune and not that particular tune, right?
Well, didn't I say, I just want to play what I love and share that.
Okay. Fair
that,
enough.
That's my baggage.
That's what it is. Okay. So good. So for those of you who don't know this material already, you're gonna. Tom's sharing his
well,
love of post-punk tonight.
I have a comment about
that's
that.
That's great.
I have a comment about that because actually, in my college days, so right before moving to New York, actually in college, like between 90 and 93,
yes.
I started to listen to a lot of rock music,
right.
and I went to a lot of shows. And my comment about what you just brought up is,
yes.
I went to a lot of shows. I usually went with a friend that like knew everything from the band that's playing, and I'm just like along for the ride.
Right.
I mean, for me, it's discovery.
Right.
Okay? Now, If you go to a show or listen to music that you know any sort of music that you're a big fan of and you know the music, yes, there's like an extra layer of appreciation and enjoyment. Okay.
Okay.
However, that doesn't mean that if you don't recognize the tunes,
right.
that you can't enjoy it.
Right.
You know, and also there's plenty of stuff we enjoy upon first listening.
Sure.
Right.
That's
and
right.
usually, you know. Great music you're gonna like on the first listening.
Right.
So that's what I'm gonna say. There might be some of you might hear no quotes that you recognize.
Right.
But that doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't preclude you from enjoying it as a piece of music.
Right.
So.
Good. Of course. Okay. Well, good. Well, I think we covered that. I think we have a good sense of what's coming up. You did mention that you want to play an excerpt from one of the groups. Is that right?
What do you think? Is that a good idea?
Tom thought he would play one little section from
a little drop the needle. Drop
the needle on a stereo lab track.
On
just
a stereo lab track.
Kind of really just plant the seed and then we'll wrap it up
and then you can see how it gets recontextualized.
Right. And then we'll. Tom will be joined by the rest of his group, which tonight includes, you want to tell us who's in your group?
Yeah, sure. Rachel Golub on viola, violin. I'm going to switch to Rachel for the other piece.
Oh, okay.
Megan Burke on cello, Sarah Schumbeck on bassoon, and Danny Tunick on various percussion instruments. Right. And thank you all for joining me.
Great. So let's, yeah. And that was my conversation with Tom Chu on Thursday, May 19th. The evening continued with two extended works performed by Ensemble Metrics, which included Rachel Golub, Megan Burke, and Chu on strings, Sarah Schoenbeck on bassoon, and percussionist Danny Tunick. Well, let's listen now to Stereo Stock, a piece based on quotations of the music of Stereolab, performed live at the Old Stone House in Park Slope, Brooklyn. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Musical Ecologies Radio Hour. For more information, visit our website at musicalecologies.net.